This morning we are on the third lesson, which actually is basically an expression of the cynicism of the king, kind of interspersed with acknowledgments of what is in fact important. And what it basically is emphasizing is the need to have a proper perspective in life. And individuals who have that proper perspective will get the most out of life as a result of it. Individuals who are lacking that perspective, and they may have that perspective in some areas but not in others. But anytime there is a lack of perspective, which kind of ties in with the first eight verses, the time for one thing or the time for another. But if we lack that perspective in one particular area, it's going to very much impact us, handicap us, make us unhappy as we seek to live our lives on this earth. And so there's some insight that he gets into in verses, I think, 11 through 15. Very, very beneficial. But the way Brother Adams writes this, there's a lot of humor to be found in this. But he's writing basically a booklet for 12 chapters, excuse me, I think there's 13 lessons, but 12 chapters. That's not a very big booklet. So he treats many of these in a surface manner. And I think that it's fine to do so. I just want you to note that if we're going a little bit too quickly and there's some insight that you want to gain from this that we're not covering sufficiently, that you can feel free to speak up and we can talk about it further. He starts off on the first page, and there's not a lot that is to be found here. It's more, again, just an introduction. But it is that there is a tendency on the part of men to want things to be fair, and they are not always fair. And he uses the example of stories and movies and things like that to point that out. One of the common things that we'll see in movies is that they come out with a happy ending, or everything is wrapped up correctly. And there have been a number of times that I've watched a movie and enjoyed the movie until the very end, and the end was not satisfying at all, and it just ruined the whole thing because of that. And I was actually reading an article on the internet just yesterday, day before, talking about 10 occasions in films to where the good guy lost. The good guy got killed, or the good guy got harmed, and the bad guy was, and it's kind of an avant-garde thing to do in you know, the last 20-30 years. Some directors want to challenge the audience by not giving you the happy ending, and it might be compelling, but it's somewhat unsatisfying for the most part when that happens, because you want the good guy to win. And so the feel-good stories are the ones we appreciate, but that doesn't always happen. And so this idea of fairness is something that goes all the way through this text, and it's combined with the concept of time. Yes.
A side story on this Hollywood thing. There was a movie made quite some time ago, probably in the 40s, and it was all about discovering what brought people up. And I think it was supposedly during the Depression time. Okay. And in the very end, the guy that went on this search was sitting in a movie theater watching, and finally found people laughing and being up. And it was just a silly cartoon. And Hollywood forgets that from time to time. We call it entertainment, and that's what we're looking for when we go. And I'm going, they need to remake that movie.
Yeah, that's true. And there is a time to laugh, as indicated in this particular text, so it ties in real well. Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I've mentioned on a number of occasions that I don't like dramas particularly. When I go to be entertained when I go to the movie, when I do so. But sadness is something that, of course, there's those that the heart tugs and the drama, and those things are enjoyable and cathartic and such. But again, the idea is that we like the stories that have neat and tidy endings. The other thing that is found on this front page that is, I think, interesting is the concept of time on here, because he talks, for example, the fact that he kind of combines it in the second paragraph, we can handle sad endings as long as they're not unjust. But he talks about the fact that time kind of changes our perspective. And the example he gave about that is kids that play Ring Around the Rosie. And I'm sure that y'all know this, but it is kind of an ironic thing that was a song that had its start and had as a reference to the plague. When they all fall down, and the posy was I forget exactly the situation, but it's a flower that's associated with death, and pocket full of posies, and it had something to do with the Black Death as well. I forget exactly what the situation was, but you know, we sing it, we laugh, and the kids are falling down. In fact, Sawyer does that. I don't know if Emberly does or not. Emberly does as well, but they know that song already, and they all fall down. They like to hit the ground. But that it was a reference. So again, it's kind of one of the aspects of time, is it basically rewrites history. Things change and alter, perception alters, which actually is a good thing. Because when you look at the text of chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, these times, it states as a part of it in verse 4, latter part, well, the whole verse 4, time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. And with regard to mourning and times of sadness, and you know, if there was not a change in perception as time progressed, it would be very, very difficult for anyone who's lost a loved one to be able to handle life, because of the way it was. And you can remember back whenever that loss happened, the way it was immediately following the death. And that's a time of mourning. It's a time of grief. The grief can be very, very strong. And if there isn't that, I guess, just a dulling of that as time progresses, then it would be very difficult to exist. And that's one of the things that he's talking about here, that we wanted to emphasize, is the importance of perspective, because this is the life that you have. He uses the phrase a couple of times in the chapter, you can't change your lot in life. And there might be people who would object to that, say, yeah, you can change your lot. You can get an education and make life better for yourself. But that doesn't alter the fact that you're going to die one day. And it doesn't alter the fact that bad things are going to happen to you, that people are going to be unkind to you. You know, there are things that we can do to mitigate the sadness that we have in our lives. The best way is, of course, to live for the Lord, because that makes everything better. But that doesn't change the fact that even if you do that, you're going to suffer as a result of living on this earth. And you can't change that. So the best thing to do is to recognize and understand that for what it is, and to have a proper perspective, because that allows you to handle those things. And that's much of what this particular chapter is talking about, and certainly it's the approach that he took in his discussion of this chapter. So there are those things that are mentioned. And the last point on the bottom of page 11 is a reference to verse 16. As a part of this, we talk about the proper perspective. We're talking about time, and we're talking about perspective. He's very cynical. In verse 16, he said, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. And it's a very cynical outlook. But basically what he's indicating, and I think that what Brother Adams points out here, is that, you know, we want for life to be fair, and there to be equity in life and fairness, to be kind of neat, nice, and tidy. But that's not reality. And so if you go into living your life expecting that, and we all do to a certain extent, especially when we're young, there's a naivety there that is a product of age. The fact that we have not yet been beaten down by life. And basically, you might remember going over to chapter 12. This is an allusion to a point that is made. Let's see here. No, chapter 11 and verse 10. The latter part of verse 10 there. Childhood and youth are vanity. That's the point that's being made, and what he wants to emphasize. When we're young, we don't realize how life is, And there is a naivety and basically a uselessness to youth, a lack of value to youth as well. And part of it is the ignorance that's found there, because the young simply do not realize how life really is. And they couldn't. We can't expect them to. But there is a lot of foolishness that's bound up in not knowing about life. And which is why there are the admonitions even in the New Testament concerning how the young are supposed to be sober-minded and not given to fancy and to various winds of doctrine and those kinds of things, because children, young people, are vulnerable. And so we have reached a point, I think everyone in here, have reached the point to where we recognize the difficulties of life. And we're not naive about the inequities. So all that remains for us is to understand that, yes, life is not fair. And there are two ways that we can look at it. We can either become disillusioned by it and unhappy, miserable, as a result of the unfairness of life. Or we can adjust our attitude, recognizing that this is the way life is and we can't change it. But we can change our interaction with it, our reaction to it. And that's where our attitude comes in, which is where the key is serving God, because that makes everything better.
Yes. I was going to say, the life on earth isn't always fair. God is fair. So we know He's ultimately in control. So it is fair in that if we put it in, we do get the reward, no matter what happens.
Right.
We get that. So.
And that's why He ends with that, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. But you've got to get to that point. And, I mean, there are people who can have some, there are a couple of ways for individuals to be happy without God in the picture. One is ignorance, and sometimes a willful ignorance. Just kind of descend into a pursuit of sensuality and don't concern yourself about the injustices in the world. Hey, I've got mine, and I'm enjoying myself, so I don't care what others are suffering. But even then, those things are not lasting, number one, and impacted by circumstances to where, you take an individual who's really enjoying his life, and then he's the one that's hit by the earthquake, or he's the one that's hit by the hurricane, or he's the one that loses everything because of whatever circumstances, or someone close to him. Just yesterday, Jeremiah... I was out working in the garage, and he sent me a message on the phone. He said, "Did you see that?" I said, "See what?" And he was watching basketball. Last night was the first game of the NBA season, and there was the Boston Celtics had a trade in the offseason, or actually a free agent acquisition. A really good player, his name was Gordon Hayward, and thought, this guy's going to put them over the top. They're going to be able to beat Cleveland and go to the finals this year. And 6 minutes into the first quarter, he lands awkwardly and shatters his leg. I mean, it was an ugly, ugly, gruesome sight. So if you see a picture of it, turn away quickly, because his foot is not pointing in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It was one of those kinds of things that might end his career. It's certainly going to end his season, but it may be a career ending, depending on what damage that twisting and fracture did. Okay, so number one, Boston Celtics season, chances of them winning is just really taking a nosedive. But the impact that it had upon all those young, invincible athletes on that court. I mean, they were really, really shaken. They were stomachs were queasy. They couldn't look at it. It really impactful to them. Now a few days will pass, and many of them will forget it. Because that's just the way of the young, to a certain extent. But it was brought home to them right there. Just, hey, this, I think I'm on top of the world and everything, but it could change in an instant. What happened to him could happen to me. And I thought that was kind of interesting, the reaction that both teams had to it. And, everyone else was concerned and such, but those players, it was such a visceral impact to them, because they were putting themselves in his place. And that's something that people don't do very often. It's one thing if let's say, a tornado hits up in Oklahoma, and you read about it and you see about it and such, but if it happens in River Oaks like it did years ago, and you're driving down the street, of course we were fortunate because it wasn't that much damage, in our little community. But you're going down the streets and seeing upturned trees and things like that, and man, that changes your perspective quickly about it, because that could have, you know, Debbie's in the backyard looking for it, and she's when she heard the things going off, she's wondering what's going on. Didn't see it because it was about a mile away. So, you know,
when they start, there's no dirt in.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary thing. But those kinds of things.
She could have seen it.
You got right by y'all, didn't it?
Yes, it just come right up over.
That was a reaction from living in West Texas all those years when, you know, a storm, you go out and you watch because you can see everything.
Yeah, you see it coming from miles around.
I just wasn't.
no oak trees in Odessa, Texas, or at least not many. Yeah.
We were coming back from a trip overseas that time, too, and that was, they didn't tell us on the plane that was
So when when it's close, it hits home, and it alters us, it changes us. But again, in that situation, everyone eventually gets to that point. You know, it seems to me that the most visceral reactions and such come from dealing with loss, and especially loss of life, whether it's a loved one or whatever the situation is. But we're all impacted to one extent or another by those things, and as time goes on, we've mentioned the loss of that young 14-year-old up in Oklahoma City. I've been, and it's another thing that happens when young people pass away, is the tributes and the involvement of the community, because it was a life taken out of proper time in our way of thinking. But he was an extremely exceptional young man, 14 years old, faithful Christian, a very good character, very outgoing and engaged, much like whenever what I read about him makes me think of Thackeray. You know, how Thackeray just comes out and is just with everyone. It's so good to shake your hand and inquire about you and those kinds of things. And this kid was apparently the same type of guy. And so, you know, the impact of those kinds of things, it's, you know, I knew him. And for the young especially, it's a very traumatic thing. But that's the way life is, and there's nothing fair about that. The fairness comes in eternity. And so if we have that understanding, then that makes a difference. With the way we view life. And people can get very, very bitter and disillusioned if they don't understand that. And so getting into the actual couplets that are mentioned in verses 1 through 8, I want you to kind of keep in mind a particular thing. If there is, again, some inability to have a proper perspective with just about any of these in these couplets, that can hamstring a person. With regard to his social interaction, with regard to his spiritual development, with regard to his happiness on earth. And so we need to understand that there is a time for all these things. Not necessarily meaning that it's fair for all these things to happen, but that it's inevitable that these things are going to happen. And if we can deal with it, we're going to be much happier as we live on this earth. So that's kind of the concept, especially with the first eight verses. And it's a famous passage. Ironically, perhaps it is a famous passage less because it was written by Solomon and found in the Bible than it was sung about by the birds back in the 1960s, which is, you know, it's kind of an irony to me. But there was a rock and roll or pop song that was written that uses these as the lyrics. And so we're pretty familiar with the words. And so just with this, a couple of introductory things. The passage of time. It's the passing of each day. Our lives revolve around time. You know, time is always something that we're considering. We're trying to save time. We don't want to waste our time. We want to know what time it is, how much time it'll take, all of those kinds of things. But time inexorably passes. Again, I was doing some browsing and came across a video. It's actually a series. Typically, what they do is they have music and they have kids reacting to music. And so it's some kind of maybe old-time rock and roll or some other kind of thing, and the kids are listening to it. And, of course, the kids have never heard this stuff before. So they think, yeah, this is neat, or this is terrible, or this is boring, or whatever, and there's some funny reactions. Well, this time they had... the elderly reacts too. And so you had some older-looking individuals, and I'm going to say older-looking individuals, who were sitting here listening to music. And the music that they were listening to was not, you know, orchestral, you know, type stuff and all, but it was, the oldest was Frank Sinatra, and then Elvis, and then the Beatles, and Simon and Garfunkel. And I got to thinking about that a little bit and thinking that, you know, and what these all gray-headed and all, they were just having such a good time remembering, you know, because these were acts that were pretty popular when they were probably teenagers and such, or maybe a little older, but when they were young. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's true because the kids, my kids, in fact, my daughter Kaylee, she loves that music, all that music, and she loves that music because that's what we always listen to on the radio when we're going. But when she sings that kind of music, like in the classroom and such, everybody looks at her like she's crazy because they don't know what she's singing. They're not familiar with those kinds of things. So times pass, Debbie was talking. We took it on the oldie station the other day, and it was playing, I think, 80s stuff on the oldie station. So it used to be when I moved to Fort Worth, the oldie stations were the 50s, then it went to 60s and 70s. And now there's some 80s stuff being played on the oldie station.
That's for the golden oldies.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a distinction. But anyway, time passes, and it passes, and we don't realize we're getting older. And you wake up one day, and your body aches, and you realize you're not a kid anymore, which that happened to me a long time ago.
That happened last Friday night where I am. There was a young man that came over there. He was 14 years old. His name is Moses Snow, and he did an hour program on Elvis Presley. He was good.
Yeah, you'd mentioned that. Yeah, there are some that are almost timeless for a while. Now, they'll eventually fade into history as well, but that's it. Time passes. So that's the point here is that, okay, time passes quickly. Now, there are a couple of points to be made. We'll get into the couplets in a second. First one is that this is letter B in the middle of page 12, and these are the important lessons learned from this. Time is important because it's rare. Nothing is in demand more. Everybody wants more time than what they have. Second, because it's irretrievable. I think that's the key to learn, is that once it's gone for good. And so you can waste a lot of your life just because you don't recognize or understand the value of time. And then finally, and this is the one that has the eternal impact, is the fact that it's fleeting. He gives two mentions. The first one, Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 10, which we already read, childhood and youth are vanity. That, you know, you think when you're young you're going to live forever, and it doesn't work that way. But the other text in James chapter 4 is that your life is but a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away. Recognition that you have no hope for tomorrow. So those are the two things that we kind of need to keep in mind, I think, is the irretrievable nature of that. Lost opportunities, basically, because we didn't utilize our time well. And the recognition that we need to get it right now because we don't know how much time we have left. Those are two important points to be made. Okay, so then that gets us to the actual couplets. So those are introductory thoughts. Anybody have any questions, comments about anything we've talked about up to this point?
I have an aunt that just recently passed away, and she always said, life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer it gets to the end, the faster it goes.
That's true. There's truth to that, isn't it? That's a good point. Okay. Let's then look at these. And again, you know, he doesn't go into great detail with each, but he does make a salient point with each of these couplets. So the first one is that there is a time for every purpose under heaven. First of all, a time to be born. And we talked about that. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven indicates, again, everything's going to happen to you in your life. We're not here talking about the fairness of it, but just the inevitability of it. And when it says a time for every purpose under heaven, understand that doesn't mean that, like, God ordained under heaven. But we're using the phrase as we've been using it from the beginning of this, is a life that is lived without respect to God. So if you're talking about your existence for the period of time that you're here on this earth, there are things that are going to happen to you. And these things are going to happen to everyone because they're an inevitable aspect of the process of life. So that's what he's saying first of all. So the first time, a time to give birth and a time to die. That's the obvious one. It's not surprising that he would begin with that. But the point that he makes here, which I think is very legitimate, is that we don't control either. You'll have kids that will say, I didn't ask to be born. And that's true. And so there are so many aspects of that that we could apply, certainly. I think that's an indication of the parental responsibility, because you're bringing into this world someone who has no say in the matter. And so you have a responsibility to care for them and certainly from the Christian perspective, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord as a result of that, because that's a soul you're bringing into the world. So there are aspects of it, but the more important one, I think, because we're applying this to ourselves specifically, is that there is a time to die, and we don't control that either. And that's what James was talking about. The arrogance of man that says, we're going to go and we're going to spend a year at this particular place and buy and sell and make a profit. We're making plans with our life without any acknowledgement of the fact that our lives could end at any point in time. The Lord could come at any point in time. And there is arrogance to be found in that, because as we mentioned with the basketball player that broke his leg, that's relatively minor, actually, even though it was very gruesome looking, but a minor thing, because he's going to, that's a guarantee. He signed a guaranteed $123 million contract, so he gets that $123 million, even though he only played 6 minutes. If that's a career-ending thing, he's got that money. But again, it indicates that you don't have control of your life, and so that's when the idea of disease and accidental death and all of those kinds of things that happen. You don't know when you're going to die. And so the application, of course, for us is to be prepared. And that's what James is talking about. It's appointed for man to die once, as the Hebrew writer said, and then after that, the judgment. And we will give an account for every deed that we have done in the body, whether good or bad. It's important that we recognize it, because it's going to happen. It is an inevitable thing. Everyone who's ever lived, with a few, very few exceptions, has died. And
does the knowledge of time cease when we die? It does, then.
The significance of time certainly does. The knowledge of time, I don't know. I think that's somewhat speculative. I'm not aware of any passage that would say. I know that they don't marry or are given in marriage for like the angels, because we're told that. But as far as a lack of an awareness of the passage of time, I don't know how we could say that for sure. Unless someone knows of a passage that's not coming to my mind. But again, think about it. God's aware of the passage of time, but he doesn't measure time as we do. With him, a day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as a day. So again, the significance of the passage of time comes to an end, because it's eternity now. The perception of it, that's one of the things. You get in Luke 16 and you see the rich man and Lazarus, and you look at that account, and I think it's a factual account. I don't think that it's a parable. It doesn't follow the construct of a parable, which is mundane, everyday things that teach a spiritual lesson. This is a reference to something that is in the spiritual realm. And so I think Jesus was actually alluding to two individuals in the spiritual realm and what happens after we die. That's my view of it. And so, it's put in language that is understandable to us. But as far as those perceptions and how it's going to be in that state, I think it'd be almost something you have to experience. What did that great gulf fix between the rich man and Lazarus look like? And if it was something that was obviously a great gulf that is fixed between, why did the rich man think that Lazarus could come over to his side? There are things about all of that I think we won't have a full understanding of what it is until such time as we pass over. But regardless, perceptions definitely change. I mean, we don't know as we. In fact, that in that statement, as a part of that, not known as will not be known as they are known. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. So, So anyway, there is that change. But again, we don't control when we die, and so we need to be prepared for that eventuality. That's a good application to make with that one. The second is, second couplet is a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. So a time to plant and a time to uproot. And that's something that you understand as far as you know, those of you who are gardeners, those of you who are familiar with farming and such, as you have no control over those times. You just have to line up your schedule with nature to make sure that you make it work right. But he makes an application here that I think is legitimate, and that is there are times in our personal lives when we plant ourselves and other times that we must uproot and move on. And that's not, again, we're talking about, this is just one, this is perhaps maybe the first point. Well, the first point can do it as well, but this is maybe a good way of applying the point that I made to introduce then, and that is that when an individual is not able to acknowledge these times, it can cause them problems and misery. So you have someone who's you know, it's time to take the next step in your life, to, okay, uproot and move on to the next, if you're not willing to do that or can't see it, or can't bring yourself to do it, then that can be destructive to you, to your welfare, to your mental health, you know, anything like that. An individual who can say that and do it with equanimity, to where, okay, this is just the next part of my life and this is what I need to do and handle it, that's something that is helpful. So that proper perspective is something, it's not always easy, but it is something that's good to have, to recognize that in everybody's life things change and sometimes circumstances change which require this uprooting. And when you do it, if you can be doing it with equanimity, and I use that word equanimity rather than being happy about it, because you're not going to be happy about it necessarily, none of us will be, or many of us will not be, especially if it's a major change in life. But to recognize that, hey, you know, it's all worth it in the end, and this too shall pass, and we'll be fine. You know, that kind of an attitude about it is something that's very helpful and beneficial.
The second one, where it says a time to plant and a time to uproot, it's interesting how when you actually look at planting, or we do a lot of hybrid things now, but they've tested all these things that they've done, and there's the nutritional value is like less than half of what it was if they just stand the time and let it develop naturally. But our society, we're always very quick paced. We don't want to wait. We want it now. But there's a lot of maturity and strength in waiting, being prepared for that time. But it's interesting. But people will still go, even though they know that this is not near as good for you as this. We just want it now.
And I think the value of waiting then, yeah.
And that's hard to... Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, as you get older, you know, and I'm sure our parents did the same thing when they looked at us, but you see it in your kids, in the lack of, you know, oh, come on, and everything is so quick-paced. There was a comic that did a thing one time about a Pop-Tart, and they talk about you can now microwave a Pop-Tart, and I thought, boy, if you don't have the time to put that in the toaster and wait... You have issues.
Yeah. Wait 90 seconds for it to get
and
it, warm.
But it's funny because yeah. That's how we are. We're more and more, we take a lot of shortcuts. But there's a maturity in waiting and recognizing that.
Yeah, that's a good point. A very legitimate point to make. Yeah. You know, there was a winery, maybe is the commercial, no wine before its time. And that's basically what they're saying. It's got to develop. You've got to allow it to mature in order for, apparently, it makes it taste better or whatever. But that's the kind of idea, and there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
So that's the idea of not... See, I was thinking of it in the opposite direction. Unwilling to do what has to be done. But then there is that other part of being impatient and doing something before it's time to do it. And that's equally...
Well, that correlates with it, though. You're unwilling to let it just naturally go.
Yeah. So the problem can happen from both directions. And probably the case in some way with regard to each and every one of these. there are two extremes as to where you can miss the boat with regard to these couples.
Amanda Jackson and I were just talking about this the other night when she was in labor. She's going through her contractions and stuff. And we were talking about how... Now, depending on where you go, she chose to go the midwife route or whatever. But I saw this with my daughter. They tried to push it earlier than it was. And, you know, and I understand that there can be medical issues or whatever, but we need to just let God designed your body to work in a certain way, and people don't necessarily want to do that.
Yeah. So we've experienced that a little bit too in our family. So that's true. Okay, next section, a time to kill and a time to heal. It's kind of an interesting statement. Again, life seems to be a strange mix between the battlefield and the hospital, and there's a lot of truth to that. The time to kill, though, that's kind of an interesting thing. I've always thought of that as time when killing is appropriate, and I don't think that's what's being said here. I think that there are times when those kinds of things are inevitable, and certainly times when capital punishment, for example, are appropriate and such. But the idea here, I think, is more along the lines of, again, the inevitability of certain times in your life. There's going to be war, and there's going to be killing, and those things are going to happen. And there will be times when you can heal from those kinds of situations or circumstances as well. And it's just, again, keeping in mind that all of these things are going to happen and having equanimity with regard to the happenings themselves. But anyway, I don't have much more than that, just to recognize the inevitability. Again, even of killing and you know, events that have transpired recently, if we're talking about killing rather than dying, would be with what happened in Las Vegas. You know, and the amazing thing about that is the how many people rage against it because of the inequity of life, and they don't recognize that from the time that Cain struck Abel and killed him until today, those things happen, and they always will. And whether or not you're, you know, for guns or against guns, or think that those things should be mitigated, the fact is that you're not going to do away with human nature, so you're not going to do away with inevitability of killing. Yes, sir.
Oh.
Yeah, go ahead and get started.
You know what you're going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to pull this too, but you can unlock the doors up front if you need to.
I'm kind of glad he came, because I don't know how long I'm going to have to be here. They're doing some adjustments to cameras and checking the security around the building, because we've got a couple things not working, sensors and all. All right, so there is that. Anything else about that? Time to kill, time to heal. Okay, next couplet then. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A breakdown and a time to build up. By the way, y'all going to have to tell me when time's up, because I'm using my phone and I lost my watch. Yeah, and my wedding ring. But it was.
Didn't find it, huh?
No, I didn't find it. Yeah, I left it, I think, in the rental car when we went on our vacation trip, and they didn't find it. So I think that's what it was. Cheap watch, $10 replacement ring that I can replace again. So it's not a big deal, but I don't have a watch. So that's y'all let me know when it's 11.
We got 10 minutes.
Okay. So the time to tear down and a time to build up. Kind of an interesting thing too, not much of significance, I suppose, to us with regard to spiritual application. I was trying to think of an example of this, and all of you have had this, how things have changed since when you go back to where you were as you grew up, and the way things are different now than what they were, new things have built up. And I've kind of thought about in 30 years that I've been here, because you got, you know, the condemned-based housing is now commercial, you know, area with the Lowe's and the Walmart and those kinds of things. And in our school district, we've had, in the time that we've been in the Castleberry School District, we've had two bond elections. And, you know, the Castleberry Elementary School is now the administrative buildings. And you've got, you know, all these new things have been built. The tornado knocked down the scoreboard, and so we got a new stadium eventually. Got a new scoreboard first, and then a new stadium, and new, you know, those kinds of things. All that change that happens as time progresses. And every time it happens, and I'm not saying that for a political point one way or the other, but there are always a group of people that like things the way they were. It's just that we all, and I think all of us kind of have that tendency. Perhaps the nostalgia has a part to play in it, but inevitably there's going to be progress. And if there's not, you can go to some of these. I went up to West Virginia and held a meeting. And what was amazing to me up there is when we were driving around the rural countryside, how many just you know, buildings that were falling down or had fallen down, you know, just wrecks of homes out there because it's a poor area, and it's just it's kind of sad to see it, you know, but that's kind of a reality as well. Time progresses, and buildings are torn down, and structures and other things are built up in their place, and just the way way things happen, and we can rail against it or we can accept it. So
everything changes, but everything stays the same.
There's truth to that. Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. That is actually a part of this. The lessons that he comes up there is that, you know, what's the purpose of life? And one of the things he stresses in this chapter is the repetitive nature of life, the cyclical nature. We also alluded to that in Ephesians chapter 1, in the verses 3 through 11. You know, the earth abides forever, the sun rises, the sun goes down, hastens the place where it arose. It's just the repetitive things. There's nothing really new under the sun. So that's an equally valid point, an equally valid reason why many will despair and not realize, not have that ability to handle those things. Time to weep and a time to laugh. This is one of the ones that I did want to emphasize because it is significant. The same next one is tied in with it, a time to mourn and a time to dance. But the idea that life has high points and life has low points. And there are a couple of things to note with regard to this. Number one is the importance. We're talking about being handicapped if you're not able to understand, perceive this. If you are one of those individuals, when it is a time to weep and you laugh, then you're not going to fit in. You're going to cause grief to others. You're going to struggle dealing with it. If it's a time for happiness and yet you can't be happy, it's even the same kind of problem. So empathy is important, and that ability to understand and recognize what is appropriate at any particular time. Which there are other things that are tied in with this, the time to embrace and a time to shun embracing as far as appropriateness. With regard to the empathy especially, we may be in a time of happiness, a time of laughter in our own lives, when our next door neighbor or our family or our spiritual family, that there's someone who's in a time of mourning and weeping in their life. That's going to happen. Number one, there's nothing wrong with you being happy when someone else is being sad. We need to recognize that. Because I think sometimes people can feel guilty and become miserable when they should be happy and enjoying the provisions and the goodness that God has given them, and they're not able to do that, not able to enjoy themselves because of the suffering of another. However, having said that, there is something to be said for being empathic, and that is to recognize when you are with someone or when there is a need. That just because you're happy and things are going well for you does not mean that it's going well for everyone else. So you need to be aware of the suffering of others so that you can do something to help alleviate and to benefit them during that time. But also the ability to feel the pain of another. And it's not something you necessarily turn on and off, but at the same time, you know, as a preacher, this kind of impacts me greatly. So let's say Debbie and I, we are on our way to visit with someone who's lost a loved one. We could, in the car ride over, enjoy our conversation. We could laugh, tell a joke, those kinds of things. And then when we get there, embrace the person that is mourning, sit down with them, cry with them, empathize with them, understand the suffering that they're experiencing, try to offer that comfort to them, and then go on our way. And our mood may very well have changed, but there is an ability on our part, it's a facility that God has given us, an ability to regain our happiness or our appreciation of our lives and what we've got, and so that we're not, you know, always depressed. You know, the job that I have, and there are others that have it, nurses, for example, doctors, individuals who work, EMTs, those kinds of things, you know, which, by the way, theirs is much more stressful than mine in that sense. But, you know, you could be miserable if you're not able to turn it off. And, I commiserate with whenever I'm going to visit with people who are in the hospital, and you almost invariably you'll have some complaint that a particular nurse is being too brusque, or the doctor doesn't seem really to care. You know, we go in there and it's destroying our lives, you know, and they've got you know, we got to wait on them to do the operation because they're having a cup of coffee before they come in. You know, they have to do that. And they couldn't exist. They couldn't continue if it weren't for the fact that they can inoculate themselves against some of that. But at the same time, the best of them are the ones that when they're with you, they radiate that empathy. And I'm reminded of the text in Romans 12:15 that's mentioned here, in time to weep and time to laugh, where it says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And that can be in the same day, you know, if it's a situation where you have an opportunity to rejoice with one person, and then later on you go and you have a reason to weep with another. And there's nothing hypocritical about it. There's just that acknowledgement that another's grief is not my own, but I can feel it with them. And I should feel it with them. But maybe, and this is the difficult one, it's difficult for us when we are in the time of mourning to recognize that our mourning does not have the same impact on everyone else as it does on ours. You know, why should anybody be happy when I'm so miserable? And we just need to understand, and if we can understand that, hey, not everyone is in the place where I am now, and others, as a result of that, aren't feeling what I'm feeling right now, and that's okay. And there will be one time when I can get back to that normalcy that I'm not feeling now. And that's kind of what we're talking about, that facility that men have, and this, if you can't do that, then it can be very, very difficult for you to continue to live your life. So that those two couplets, a time to weep, time to laugh, time to mourn, time to dance. Oh, by the way, I did want to add one thing to that one, a time to mourn and a time to dance. Go over just a couple of chapters to chapter 7, Ecclesiastes 7:12. Nope, not 7:12, 7:2. Now, this is a truth, but it's a hard one to really, for many people, to grasp. It's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. And so there is a time for mourning, and there is a time for dancing. That basically indicates a time for funerals and a time for weddings. It's kind of, you know, celebration or a grief. But the lessons are learned in the time of grief, and there's some value to even those times. And that's hard to see in the moment, but it's a perspective that you can gain as time progresses. All right. Questions, comments about those two couplets? All right. What time is it? What do we got? We got 5 minutes. Okay. Then we have next a time to throw stones and a time to gather. He states here times of confrontation as well as times of affirmation. I always have a tendency whenever I see these things to make this applications that surround God's people and such, which would, to me, bring up the idea of the necessity sometimes of church discipline. It's not always a pleasant thing to do, but there are times when those kinds are needed. I'm reminded of how Jesus, we talked in our sermon this past week about the woman caught in the act of adultery, and Jesus said, neither do I condemn you, go and sin no more. So he showed compassion in that, and he puts it here as affirmation, but the idea of the fact there was no condemnation, but rather an encouragement that was given, go and sin no more on that occasion. But there are other times when Jesus, he was harsh in his condemnation of certain individuals. And so he knew what was what as far as appropriate times. And it's not always best to overlook sin. It's not always best to tolerate. It's not always best to be going along, getting along. Sometimes that's wrong to do that. In fact, as far as just letting it happen, that's always wrong. But the point is that sometimes things have to be dealt with. So there is that. My application that. Okay. Time to embrace, a time to shun embracing. And what I get from that is that sometimes things that are appropriate, that are appropriate in one setting, are not appropriate in others. And it's kind of interesting, the public displays of affection, PDAs is what they're called, and there are rules with regard to public displays of affection in schools and in businesses and those kinds of things. There are times when we see a couple of people holding hands and we think, oh, that's sweet, but then you see people who are making out on this, in the park or something, you think that's just completely inappropriate. And that's a point. But again, understand that it's inevitably that there are times when individuals will do that should not do that and are not doing it in an appropriate manner or setting. And that's just inappropriate. I like that word inappropriate, I guess. And then a time to search and a time to give up as lost. Of course, I'm reading from his text, so a time to gain and a time to lose is what is mentioned there. Time to gain and a time to lose. His point that he makes on this is one that's poignant. Can you imagine? I forget now what it was. It was in South America somewhere. It's been a number of years ago. It may have been, I think it's South America. It was a massive, massive earthquake, and hundreds were killed because of the buildings that collapsed. And, you know, in the first several days, up to a week, they were pulling people out who were still alive. But then that week passed, and lack of, you know, water and such, and no one from that point on was alive. And yet the progress had to continue. It still had to be done. And that's a dilemma. Sometimes people have to know when it's time to just give it up as lost and go on. And sometimes that's a difficult thing to do as well. My time to give up my wedding ring and my watch was when I looked everywhere I could look twice. And actually, I still haven't called Jeremiah, but I know it's not there. But anyway, there's that one possibility. I mean to do that. But then when I called the guy at the car rental place, and he said, oh, well, we've already sent that out. He said, I'll try to call someone. I thought, okay, well, that's it. And sure enough, he had called back. So it's time to give it up. Time to give it up is lost, I guess. Okay, a time to keep and a time to throw away. And this is the thing that came up with me. It's when I thought about this idea. It's time, okay. The kind of time to keep and time to throw away is how you can be hamstrung when you don't acknowledge and understand this. Because what came to my mind when I did this every time is hoarding, the people who hoard. Have you ever watched that show, Hoarders? Oh, it's horrible.
I'm not hoarding.
I didn't say you were. I wasn't going to bring you up at all. But the thing is, you know, you got people that are. I guess people here in Westside that are, not her, but we do. And what I just think about is just that, okay, here's a, you know, it's a newspaper from 5 years ago that has no special significance, but someone just cannot allow themselves to give it up. That's sad.
Well, it's true. It's an emotional thing.
Yeah, I know. It's true. I know. It's emotional. An addiction. It's a compulsion. It's a sign of a mental problem in that case with hoarding. But again, it's the point that we're making here is that even to lesser extent, those kinds of attachments and such, if they've outlived their usefulness and you can't recognize it, can't see it, that it can cause problems for one or two reasons. Either you don't get rid of what you need to get rid of, so the problem, whatever it is, it's that maintaining or retaining this is causing, remains, and you don't resolve the problem because you can't bring yourself to give it up. Or you give it up and you're miserable for having done it.
No, you need it in 2 weeks after you give it up.
See, she is a hoarder. She is a hoarder.
Okay. Oh, it happens.
So anyway, so we didn't quite get through all of it. We'll go and talk a little bit top page 13 and start there next week, okay? Appreciate everybody's kind attention today.